Join a blue box full of brave companions as they travel through space and time, lords, looking for the most famous of all, Doctor Who. Welcome to the Lonely TARDIS. I'm Dolly Domofsky. Also with me, as usual, the energetic, high energy, lovable, huggable Stephen Strum.
Hello.
And the macabre Marcus Beer.
I
never know how to pronounce that word.
Macabre.
I'd said it wrong all three times. Wonderful. Did not get it. Sean is once again out, so the on again, off again love affair we have with Sean on the TARDIS continues. Yeah, he had to go away for work. Very busy season for him right now. So, but he will be back next week, and we will potentially get Susan with us next week, and a lot of folks have been messaging us about it. Just working out schedules. It can be tough this time of year with the holidays and so on. Remember, everybody, Doctor Who usually ends its seasons by now. So that's why we were always able to get everybody together. But this year, everything has kind of shifted. I'm all right with it. We have a lot to talk to today. Today seemed like every time I updated my RSS feed, there was new Doctor Who news breaking. And then Marcus got a scoop, which is great. So yeah, it was a kind of a crazy day for Doctor Who news from like all avenues. So we'll touch on that stuff. We'll talk a little bit about the Doom Coalition 1 Big Finish. I'm gonna do my little mini review right here on the air of the overall experience. And then we'll dive into The Woman Who Lived, the second half of this episode. Let's dive into the news. I don't have a funny bumper or a cool bumper for that. We're just gonna talk to it. So, big news, first and foremost, we've wanted Catherine Tate back on Doctor Who. We're getting Catherine Tate back on Doctor Who, in a way, because joining Catherine Tate will be David Tennant in Doctor Who Big Finish episodes, audio plays. So they've signed on our favorite companion and Doctor combination, I'd say, right? Marcus, I know you're a huge Catherine Tate Donna proponent. I know I am. I thought she was wonderful. I know Stephen was positive on her, so I think this is good news. It's coming May 2016, the first series.
I'm done with it.
Yep. And Stephen, you have you had a chance to listen to the Big Finish stuff yet?
I haven't yet, no, but I'm really looking forward to it, and especially hearing you talk about it at the beginning of this thing here.
Yeah.
But I'm really looking forward to this one in particular. Like, this felt like a fantastic idea.
Yeah, so it's the series is going to open. It starts on May 2016. It's going to be three full cast audio adventures. So it's basically three episodes, but full hour long. So it's going to open with Technophobia, written by Matt Fitton. And there's actually a cool trailer-ish thing to talk that they've been showing about Tennant and Tate kind of chatting it up and talking about it. And then the second episode is The Time Reaver, written by Jenny T. Colgan. And the third and final one is The Death and the Queen by James Goss. And I think the best part about this, and I mentioned it before the show started to Marcus and Steven, is that Moffat has none of his fingers are in this. This is all pure writers and production and the cast doing what they do best. Can't go wrong with that, I don't think.
Yeah, you'd hope so. Like, again, I'm not as intimately familiar with like specific writers on the Big Finish stuff or anything like that, so I don't know who exactly is working on this one outside of the main talent. But just based on like just very generally about like the critical reception to the Big Finish stuff, it's seems like they are probably the most liked thing in Doctor Who right now, like in terms of like original Doctor Who content. Like, I can't, like, maybe some of the books and stuff like that, but I hear mostly people talking about the radio plays more than anything. So
yeah, it's great. They've been spot on. They've been getting better and better, and the writing has been getting, the writing's never been bad, but the stories they've been telling have been really thrilling and really engaging. So I'm pretty stoked about it.
The thing you were mentioning about the like the painting that was changing over time and all that stuff. Not to get into spoilers for people, you know, too badly into spoilers for people, but you know, we're you're listening to it and checking it out and stuff like that. That sounds like a good Doctor Who story. That sounds like something that like that sounds like something Tom Baker would deal with. You know, you would come back to this like painting and you know, from scene to scene to scene, and there'd be like some big clangy da 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 kind of music, and they would notice that the painting had changed again, and they'd find another dead body or something like that. That sounds like something fun, which, by the way, I thought this week's episode of Doctor Who also felt kind of like an old episode of Doctor Who in some ways, in other ways, not at all.
We'll get to that momentarily here. But yeah, so there we go. Big finish. Tennant and Tate back together as a team, and we could be more delighted. More news. This was kind of shocking because this one happened out of nowhere, and that is K-9. The lovable robot dog is getting his own movie. There's a K-9 movie coming. It's a feature-length film. It's awesome. It's let's see, Bob Baker, who is kind of co-created K-9 way back in the day in the 70s, 77, is basically producing this. So you can't be sad about it. It's going to be a theatrically released film about K-9. It's going to be called K-9 Timequake.
Sounds like the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, true.
I'm not, like, I don't know what you guys think. We didn't really talk about it at all prior to this, but, like, this to me just sounded like, my immediate reaction was just like, why? Like, what? Like, K-9 is fine as like a mechanical device, you know, on Doctor Who, like a plot device and a character that moves things along, and you know, maybe some comedy relief in certain older episodes and things. But like, was anybody like saying themselves like the personality of K-9 himself is strong enough to carry an entire 2-hour film for everyone to enjoy?
Here's the press release. A new look high-tech K-9 for today's cinema is being prepared for film stardom. The film K-9 Timequake has been written by one of K-9's original creators, Bob Baker, a renowned writer of classic Doctor Who serials. There's some talk about Bob going on to write Wallace and Gromit series of films and Curse of the Were-Rabbit. He says, the new K-9 will appear in a multi-million dollar movie, which promises to be a great action adventure. All right, got it? Ready? Here we go. Hold on to your butts. Set in deep space, the film will be full of dashing heroes and heroines, androids, monstrous aliens, and an ultimate foe who will also be familiar to Doctor Who fans everywhere, the megalomaniac Omega.
I mean, it would have to be full of, like, dashing heroes and villains and things like that, because who wants to, like, sit there and listen to, like... K-9, like, sound alike his way through, like, 2 hours of a movie, like, just, like, screeching at the TV every, you know, five, or I guess that in this case, the projector every 5 minutes. Like, that's ridiculous.
This is, at first I thought, okay, it's got to be a spoof. It's got to be some kind of joke. There's no way.
I thought it was like a made-for-TV thing until you said theatrically released, and I was like, what?
Multi-million dollar. I mean, it is multi-million dollar in a way that, you know, the BBC does multi-million dollar. Yeah,
it is more than $1 million. It is two.
I'm curious as to what this is going to be like. Is it going to be animated? Is it stop motion? I would actually dig a stop motion K-9 film. You know what they should make, speaking of films, is a Lego Doctor Who movie. I think give us a game, give us a movie. I think then we're onto something there. Yeah, it was kind of weird when I first heard this news. I think it was just a couple hours ago before we started recording. I don't know what to think. I guess I'm happy for more Doctor Who stuff, but it's almost a lot like that Class news from a couple of weeks back, 2-3 weeks ago.
Isn't that who was asking for this?
Yeah, exactly. Like, who was asking for K-9? Granted, was it Sarah Jane Adventures had K-9 in it, right?
Yeah, like every once in a while, but like, but like, you know, Sarah Jane was a character on that show. She had like a personality and like motives, and like it could emote her face and make you think, you know, like carry a show and stuff like that. Like K-9 is like he has like 5 lines in every episode that he's ever in. Like,
I can't wait for the Sonic Screwdriver movie. That's gonna
be exactly. There you go. Like that's why the Sonic Screwdriver. That's why they couldn't get the Sonic Screwdriver back this year. He was too busy starring in his own feature-length animated film, multi-million dollar project.
Multi-dollar project.
Multi-dollar project, yeah.
So, yeah, Marcus, what do you think? Are you even the slightest bit intrigued about a canine movie? Put down the game controller. Unmute.
Sorry, Marcus has left the building.
Marcus was in a different era in London, actually.
Mm-hmm. No, I'll be totally honest with you. I think you know, K9 was my era doctor. Big fan of K9. I have numerous K9s and a huge wooden poster of him up on the wall. I just got a sneaking suspicion that this version of K9 is going to come with Instagram and built in and streaming capabilities and all sorts of fun stuff.
There's going to be jokes about, it's like, your dog has Bluetooth. Like, that line is coming. It's like somebody's going to be like, I just need to hook up my Bluetooth or something like that. And then somebody's going to say, your dog has Bluetooth. Whoa. Like, just fucking good Lord. Like when Dally, you said, like, you know, it'll be updated with a new look for a new century or whatever, all that stuff, like, instantly I thought, like, man, Marcus is going to rebel against this. Like, this dog is going to, like, look like I assume that Marcus would come in here swinging with, like, it's going to be Matt Damon wearing, like, fake metal dog ears or something like that, and, like, I don't know, like,
Matt Damon, the canine.
He's the only man we can put in space anymore, and he's the only man who can star in space movies, so, you know, if you're gonna get somebody,
the only one that gets stranded in space films.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've said all I have to say. I mean, the press release alone just sounds so bad. And the fact that they're bringing back Omega, who is the ultimate enemy of the Time Lords. I mean, they're throwing him away on a K-9 story.
I'm curious if there will be any mention or tie to Doctor Who at all. I mean, I'm sure they'll mention it. And there's no date. There's no date when this movie is actually coming out. So it could just be a
week after Hell freezes over, probably.
Yeah. This may be one of those things where they had to announce a movie based on the IP just so they can continue keeping the intellectual property, which so often – I mean, it's basically the Fantastic Four syndrome, right?
Is that a thing with K-9? Like, K-9 seems pretty, like, heavily shifted into Doctor Who. Like, I didn't really necessarily think they'd, like, who was out there going off and buying the rights to a K-9 movie where, BBC needed to grab it up?
Who knows, but we'll find out eventually whenever this movie gets created.
Wow, there's so much. You could have make an actual Doctor Who movie, like make a Time War movie, you know, like make.
Yeah, God, yes, that'd be awesome.
Apparently, the theatrical releases for that worked out fine. Like, make a 10 Doctors movie or something like that, or make a 12 Doctors the 12 Doctors or whatever you have to do, you know, with the weirdness of, like, the different actors missing and stuff like that. But do something, like, use that money on something that people care about. Like, this screams to me like the kind of thing, like. Well, some BBC executive was like, well, K-9 was popular when I was a kid, so clearly he needs his own movie in because he'll be popular enough with kids today for, you know, to carry his own project. Don't get me wrong, like, none of this is to say that I dislike K-9. I think K-9 is great, but, like, K-9 is used for a very specific thing, and this just seems like the most, like, ridiculously, like, short-sighted isn't even the right word. It's like, it's like crooked-eyed or something like that, or some new made-up cockeyed. There you go, like something like that. Like looking off into different universes where this is maybe going to be successful. Like this was actually greenlit by an alien working at BBC Studios, and I just don't get it.
Well, I think this Bob Baker guy is the co-creator and therefore owns 50% of the rights.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing it's more him than anything else, and the BBC probably not putting up much funding, if anything. Okay. I'm still waiting for the Kickstarter.
Then how do they have Omega in there too?
Yes.
Like BBC. Well,
if he wrote during
he created.
That era, it's just like with Terrence Dicks, who created the Daleks.
Okay. Oh, and then we did have the Dalek movies.
Yeah, the difference in the UK and the US is that, you know, with the Stan Lees and, you know, all the guys who, you know, worked on the comic books and created those, you know, incredible characters and got dicked especially, you know, the Batman guys, Bob Kane, etc. Because in the US you had the for hire law. It's not the same.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Well, who knows? We won't hold our breaths we won't wag our tails, our robotic tails. We'll just wait and see if this actually happens. And a couple more bits of news here. One, and this was revealed Saturday after The Woman Who Lived aired, but Maisie Williams is actually in 3 episodes this season. Yes, she's confirmed to be in the episode 10 of this season. So it's not the last 2 episodes, but one of those, the third to last, I guess. Alongside Riggsy, who was from Flatline last season, one of the episodes we really liked. So both those characters are going to be back, Ashielder and Riggsy, in this episode 9, which I think fits in kind of nicely. We talked about, you know, them almost wasting Maisie Williams in 2 episodes back-to-back, her character. Well, now we get to see a little bit more of a, you know, hopefully the story is told a little bit better. Maybe there's a finale or a completeness to the story when they bring her in episode 10 of this season. So, and the episode's called Face the Raven. It's written by Sarah Dollard, and all this was announced during, I think it was the MCM, Doctor Who panel. MCM is almost like a little mini con over in Manchester, I believe. Manchester City. So yeah, that's what's going to happen. Maisie Williams back.
I have my suspicions that this is going to be a very small thing that they like filmed while they were already like doing these other 2 episodes. Much like, you know, the season, what was it, 5 or 6, where, you know, with Vincent Van Gogh and all that stuff, you had that sort of montage at the beginning of that episode with like all these different characters from Doctor Who's past of that season, like having visions of the Doctor you know, doing all this other stuff. And I think that is a mechanic that Doctor Who uses quite often. I think that's going to be this. I also think that, like, is Riggsy going to be in the very same episode?
Apparently, yeah.
My guess is that she will, like, show up, have a small conversation with Riggsy because he had a run-in with the Doctor or something like that, and then she will, like, notice something big, bad, crazy thing going on, like the Master and leading an army of Daleks to Earth or something like that, and will run off to go warn the Doctor. So, something like that. It's going to be very small, my guess is.
Yeah, I'm curious, and especially after we'll talk momentarily about this week's episode. There's a lot of stuff that happened this week that obviously, her character, mini spoiler, her character does not perish, and we find out that she's still around. So, yeah, we'll see what transpires. But she's before anybody wants to know, no, she is not going to be the next companion. They've come out several times and said that, and they've confirmed it and reconfirmed it. So, no, she's not going to be the next companion. And her Game of Thrones filming just takes up way too much of her time. She can't afford to give up a lot of time with that. So. And then the final bit of news, and Marcus sprung this on me before the podcast started. Marcus, what is the big scoops that you've heard?
Well, rumor has it, and this is coming from a couple of the UK papers, so please take this rumor with a bucket size of salt. I mean, it may be true, but I hope it's true, but it is the UK rags. Capaldi has signed for another season, which would take him up to 3 with an option for season 4. And we will see next year's episodes being split into several feature-length episodes, because filming for 9 months a year is quite taxing, especially when you're 57 years of age, which is what he is. And I think it's beginning to really make a lot of sense now. If you look at the 2-parters that we've had this season, everyone has been a 2-parter. And that means that there's less shuttling around and traveling with regards to shoots. And it's perhaps a little more, you know, less stressful on Capaldi. And, you know, I mean, these 2-parters could have easily been condensed into a couple of specials. No problem at all. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's good news if it's true.
Yeah, I'm excited, because I do think Capaldi is now hitting stride as the Doctor, and obviously Clara is going to be missing in action, which we know this is her last season. Yeah. So going out and giving us maybe feature length. I know it's kind of a bummer, but we do have these big finish books that kind of keep us engaged throughout. But Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And when do we know when Class, the TV show, is going to be appearing? Is that sometime in next year as well?
Do they even say in the thing? I mean, maybe they did, and I'm just yeah. I'm not sure. Yeah.
Well, we have a lot of things next year. Of course, I'd love to have a full Doctor Who season yet again, but maybe we can survive if that means it gives Capaldi some time to, relax a little bit and catch up. Yeah, his birthday was actually very very recently. I think it was towards the tail end of summer when they were filming the last episode. This episode that we're going to speak to, the woman who lived. It was his birthday that weekend. So. That week. So that's, he's getting up there, and I'm fine with bringing him back for a couple more seasons.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all. Like with Capaldi, I agree that he's kind of feels like he's starting to find his stride a little bit. And, I do wonder if like, we talk about how taxing it is to do the show and everything like that, but obviously like Capaldi's not like he's an older gentleman, but like, he's not decrepit, you know, he's not senile or anything like that. I do wonder if, you know, some of that is just kind of like just general mental fatigue of like working on Doctor Who and like seeing the kind of like response that the show has been getting, which has been tepid these last, you know, several seasons and everything like that. And just not like, obviously I can't put words into Capaldi's mouth without hearing from him or anything like that. But like, I do wonder if it's just like, if you're in that position and you're a guy with, you know, some really good acting chops, and you mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of great stuff to be done out there right now, especially with TV the way that it is. Like, I wonder if the rewards necessarily justify the amount of work that it takes.
Yep. Well, it's all good in my book so far. Of course, these are rumors, but Marcus is better connected than we are. With the
better connected. I just have more time to surf the internet than you.
There you go. That is correct. That is, in a sense, being better connected. You're much more connected. You have more time to be connected. Let's dive into the big finish. The Doom Coalition won. So last week I touched on the first episode, and I wanted to kind of just give my overall thoughts on the entire package as a whole. And it's wonderful. It really is fantastic. So again, this is McCann. This is the Eighth Doctor, and it has all the sensibilities of the pre-Eccleston era of Doctor Who. So it very much feels like classic Doctor Who. We haven't hit the Time War yet. There are plenty of other Time Lords. Gallifrey is still in play. And in this series of four episodes, we actually visit Gallifrey on occasion. And so, the whole first episode takes place in Gallifrey. And what I really liked about this is it's 4-hour-long episodes. And it's the Doctor and his companion Liv, and they're trying to track down the 11, which I mentioned last week was a Time Lord who has all 11 of his incarnations trapped in his head, and all of his personalities are there. And I think that, to me, that's a phenomenally cool premise for a character. And I don't think they could do something like that today because of on TV, I should say, because of the way, you know, the Moffatisms and the way everything is kind of strung together. But by doing so in this specific way, it really shows the freedom that the books can have. They can go crazy with characters and character development and interconnected storylines. And these four episodes are linked together with that whole premise. The Doctor is hunting the 11. And so each of these episodes, he's finding clues and bits and pieces of where to go next. So the first episode, he finds out he has to go to, go back to, Victorian era, let's just say. And the second episode, he finds a record that forces him to go back to Roman times. He finds information to send him back to the future. And so they're all linked together. The 11 is kind of the thread that ties all this. And the Doctor, of course, he's, as usual, he's put in these harrowing situations. He's nearly dead. He nearly killed every single time. But so there's definitely suspense. But the individual episodes are fantastic. And they definitely play like their own stories. But you can feel the links. So what I think the episode I loved the most was the second episode, which was The Red Lady. And it was about this art collector who had these paintings, these murals, these tapestries. And depending on, and I'm not going to spoil the main plot here, but people would see this female figure in these tapestries, and only certain people, the reason. And depending on when they saw this woman, she would get closer and closer to the front of the tapestry, and they would start seeing her image everywhere. So it would go from a tapestry to billboards to reflections in windows, and she would get closer each time until eventually the person who saw her died. And so the way this particular episode is edited, it's very much like a horror movie, in that you don't know who is going to see her and in what position they're going to see her. Is she going to be removing her mask? Is she going to be still off in the distance? And the clues are scattered throughout that sort of lead you to, well, initially, let's just say they don't think anything of this tapestry because they're kind of chasing this a red herring all the way throughout. They finally get back to the red lady as the main point of this episode, and it's just strung together so well. And it's almost like the I hate to say Blair Witch Project, but it's horror, and this is very horror based Doctor Who. The things you don't see in the way they're kind of explained and described in the audio play, but because you don't see them, I think to me that is much more impactful, much more powerful. And so they did a phenomenal job with this episode. And by the end, I was actually listening to it at my office while I'm supposed to be getting some work done. Sorry if my boss is listening. But I had to put down my drawing tablet and just kind of lean back in my chair, close my eyes, and listen to the stuff that was unfolding. It was that good. And I highly recommend, if you're going to get the Doom Coalition, which I definitely recommend it, get it just for this episode. This whole episode holds up the premise of what audio plays can be. So yeah, I highly recommend the entirety of the Doom Coalition, this episode in particular, the Red Lady, and the others are good as well, but I are great as well. But I think this one was above and beyond one of the best listening experiences, I guess, audio play and audiobook wise that I've had in a long time. And it's very Doctor Who. And I think you can't go wrong with that. So yeah, that's my big finish. A lot of talking. Is there anything you guys want to know about what I talked to, Stephen, Marcus, anything, any questions you have?
Nope. Yeah, I think mostly what I want to do is I just want to get in and start listening to it rather. It's kind of hard to, you know, avoid spoilers and stuff like that because, you know, with Doctor Who, when we talk and everything like that, it's kind of guaranteed that we're going to talk about spoilers and such like that because it's generally pretty easy to get our hands on that stuff very quickly, whereas, you know, for stuff like this, it's maybe a little bit harder for some people and, you know, which I've talked about in the past, it's expensive and, you know, it's difficult to get to sometimes. Yeah. It's difficult to find sometimes, you know, specific episodes. But hopefully that's changing over time if Big Finish is starting to pay attention to stuff, you know, to people who've been asking for it. And so
I think one thing that I found really cool was the ties to, you know, a lot of the themes that we see now of why the Doctor chooses human companions and, you know, and why he doesn't choose immortal companions and alien companions. And so there, some of the things that we're seeing right now in the TV series, and then we'll talk to you in a second here. That's in this four episode set. And another thing that I found really cool was how many references they have to other doctors within this. Right. So in the third episode, two of the characters are speaking and they're talking with the doctor. How do you know the doctor? When did you meet him? And his companion at the moment says, well, I met the doctor, but it was actually a different doctor. He was much older when I first met him, and now he's different. And so she had met an older incarnation of the doctor, and now it's McCann's doctor who's younger. So you think, okay, well, who was the older incarnation? Was it Capaldi? Was it Hartwell? Was it, you know, Pertwee? Was it somebody else? I thought that was a nice touch. And same with Galileo. The third episode deals with Galileo. He says the same thing. You know, it's like, you're not the doctor that I know, but you are, but you're not. It's a different face. And so they do tie into a lot of that. And I thought that tie back to Doctor Who lore, I think, was really cool. So, yeah, Big Finish. Doom Coalition 1, definitely check it out. Thumbs way up for this one.
Okay.
All right, so let's dive into the TV episode, which was, to me, a 180 from last week, but we'll get into that. It was The Woman Who Lived, the second half of the Maisie Williams. Well, now we find out it's the second of three Maisie Williams episodes. Who knows, again, what that third episode will hold. The synopsis is as such. It's England. It's 1651. The doctor shows up, and again, this is a doctor without Clara. In this episode, he shows up, the deadly highwayman, the nightmare with a K, and his sidekick, who we don't really know who it is quite yet, lurking in the shadows, stalk the dark streets of London. But when they find loot that's not of this world, they come face to face with the doctor. Who is the nightmare in league with? And can the doctor avoid the hangman's noose and protect Earth from a devilish betrayal? That is the synopsis for this episode. Right away, what are your initial thoughts about this episode? Because this is the second half of this, or the second part of this Maisie Williams piece. Marcus, I'm asking Marcus right now. Put down the controller for a second, Marcus.
Controller's already down. Controller has been down for a while. I want to step away during the big finish stuff, because I didn't want to listen.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
I want to sort of like just come into it fresh when I have some time to listen to it. This was a good episode, and it just goes to show how bad, in my opinion, last week's was, because, you know, this would have made a pretty good special, maybe, you know, a good hour 15 condensing the two episodes. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's be totally honest. The bad guys were totally superfluous, other than to perhaps introduce the tech. Mm-hmm. I could have done without the character from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe there. Aslan.
You mean Richard the Lionheart? Yeah.
Richard. Yeah. Leon, I think his name was.
Leandro,
maybe? Leandro, yeah, sorry, Leandro.
Leo the Lion, yeah. I mean, that was just cheese. And the amount of time and effort went into makeup and stuff, it's like, and the effect, couldn't they have found perhaps another way to really sort of like just show her, you know, what she didn't want, and sort of like snap her out of it. Mm. So yeah, I mean, Maisie Williams and Capaldi had great chemistry. You know, I thought they worked together really well. She would make a fantastic, you know, companion, I think. But then again, given Moffat's lack of writing skills, God help. So yeah, it was frustrating. Because it just felt like last week was all, you know, all the more nothing. You know, they could have accomplished probably, you know, everything they put across two episodes in one, at least. Felt padded out in a lot of ways. And I mean, again, the stuff we saw coming was so telegraphed. I mean, that whole thing about, you know, the guy who was trying to rob her and got the kiss, and, you know,
oh, he was wonderful.
You know, Sam, he was good. No, he was good, but I mean, it was just so telegraphed. I mean, it would have been interesting to learn more. You know,
he doesn't show up till like 2/3 of the way through the episode.
He shows up right at the beginning, and then he comes back towards the end. Right.
But you know, you can just tell he's going to be, you know, the romantic interest later on down the line. It would have been nice to see a little more from her diaries, maybe. It would have been nice to see the doctor, you know, in the pre-credit sequence, maybe checking in on her at the leper colony. You know, show a little bit of, you know, her, because it's obviously a follow-on episode. Mm-hmm. So let's see what she's been up to. Maybe that could have been the thing last week, you know, get the nitty-gritty out of the way in the first 15 minutes, and then show her as she progresses through time. I mean, I love the Captain Jack reference.
Yes, I think everybody did. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it just, again, last the performances were great. On the whole, it was a much better episode. It was just, you know, the stink factor from last week just drags it down for me.
Go ahead, Stephen.
Oh no, I wasn't about to say anything.
No, this is a tough episode for me, and the reason being is because part of it was I was so drained when I started watching it on Saturday that I kept falling asleep and nothing was clicking, and when a show can't hold me emotionally and can't keep my focus and I'm passing out during it, then that's never a great sign. So I had to I kind of chipped away at it Saturday night until I was able to actually watch it. But when I finally did watch the entire episode, I ended up rewatching it on Sunday. I kind of reversed my thoughts about it. I did start to like it a lot more. It was much more of a holistic episode, and it was definitely better than last week's. Going into this week, I did not care for a Shielder's character at all. Coming out of this week, I suddenly felt like, wow, there is a great potential in this figure. This is the second daughter that the Doctor has when you kind of think about it. And then at one point, a Shielder, or she calls herself Me, which I thought was brilliant. She calls him Father. I think she even addresses him as Father a couple times because he did basically create her. He made her, you know, she was alive for whatever, 14, 15, 16 years prior to the Doctor giving her eternal life, which when you think about her having kids and relationships throughout that time and her still kind of being stuck in that 15, 16-year-old frame of hers was kind of icky, but whatever. That's neither here nor there. I thought her character was very, very compelling. You know, we didn't get Jenny, the original daughter of the Doctor, but we got something that was kind of interesting as well. And she even asks him about joining him on his adventures, and he says no, because having two immortal people on a TARDIS is never a good thing. And I think part of that is because the only way the Doctor can really appreciate what he does, his travels, is being with people, being with humans who don't have eternal life. Everything to humans, every moment is cherished and impactful. And having somebody who is immortal, that's the opposite of that. And you kind of tell from her stories, because she stopped caring about humanity, about people, and it kind of went to the motions. And she kept those journals to remind her of all her adventures. And how old is she? She was probably, 900 years old at least at this point. 900 to 1,000, I don't know. But she had to keep journals of her adventures so that she could remind herself, because, you know, you'd cram all that level of memory into a human mind, which isn't necessarily – human brain's not made to keep that memory level. You know, it's almost like her mind ran out of space. And so she started cutting away the things that weren't important to her, like her family and her you know, aspects of her history, of her name. And so I thought that was a really interesting take on the idea of immortality and why the Doctor doesn't bring other immortals with him on the TARDIS. Now, her especially, I like that she called herself Me, because a name wasn't important to her. Every generation, all her friends would die, and she would have to have a brand new name anyways. And so she's called herself Me, and I thought that was very kind of telling of her character, because it made her less human and less connected to humans. I think she fully embraced being immortal and didn't care for people all that much. And throughout the episode, you find that out, that she's, you know, she is a nightmare. She doesn't care about people. She's just going through and doing things that interest her, and whether she survives or not, it doesn't really matter to her. So I didn't necessarily like her flipping at the very end of the episode, saying, I lied. I really do like people. I really do care for people. Because we learned all throughout this episode that she's kind of, yeah, she had moments where she's upset that her children passed away during the plague, and she's had, you know, she had lovers and family members and stuff that have died, but she almost resented humanity and being human. And then, she flips the switch at the very last second when the lion, probably a lion-shaped ship, more than likely, was shooting lion-shaped fireballs and at these townspeople. So
it was kitty litter.
It was kitty litter, exactly. I didn't like the hole in the sky. I thought that was kind of forced in. And of course, the aliens themselves, this whole idea of this lion, was totally unnecessary. I thought I could have just focused on her and this amulet, her search for like these mystical things, and that could have been a lot better premise than just shoehorning these really bad looking alien lion designs. But and then I felt at the very end, the idea of the chip was cool, because you never knew who she was going to give it to. I thought she would have given it to her family or to her brother or sister or dad or someone, but no, she gives it, you know, she had never given it to anybody until she gives it to Sam the Swift. thought that was pretty cool. A cool,
Sam,
cool touch.
Sam Swift the Quick, or right? Sam Swift the Quick,
yeah, yeah, something like that. Yeah, yeah. So, I liked the episode. I didn't love it because I thought there were some letdowns, but overall, it was much more way more compelling than last week. And I think the payoff was worth it up until the very end.
I think I agree with both of you guys pretty much on the nose this week. Like, I just, you know, I didn't love the, like, it's weird because the episode, I think, is like kind of goes in the reverse of a lot of the things that last week did, which is that, you know, the last week we had these villains that, you know, looked really great. They had kind of an interesting kind of shtick to them, in my opinion, anyway. Yep. You know, they had this kind of interesting thing going on. They looked cool. Whereas this week we just had these ridiculous looking thing. It looks like the king from Bedknobs and Broomsticks, you know, breathing fire on everybody. And I just, did not care for any of that stuff. And, you know, the very concept that, you know, a shield has been around for hundreds upon hundreds of years and apparently is, like, believes this, like, giant lion man who, you know, kills people and, like, lives in the forest and, like, has glowing red eyes and...
Yeah. And sleeps on her lawn.
Sleeps on her lawn and has, like, an entire, you know, device that... Like, his space travel device is built on technology that murders people, and she's like, well, he seems trustworthy. He seems like somebody I can hang out with. Like, all that seemed... There was everything involving that character and that monster and everything like that was just utterly ridiculous. It, right down to the last, like, they'll kill me for this because it's narratively convenient for them to disintegrate me here at the end. All of that was ridiculous. Much better with, like, Maisie Williams. Anything focusing on her was much better. I dig the idea of her being like Mad Hetty from Sandman and Constantine, Constantine, whatever you want to pronounce, however you want to pronounce it, like this immortal English person, you know, living from era to era, trying different things over and over again. There's a character, I say Mad Hetty, but like there's a character in Neil Gaiman's Sandman who is very, very similar in concept to that, where he's an English man who decides that. Death is for suckers, basically, and just chooses not to die, and so lives for the rest of his life, you know, lives for the rest of eternity, and, like, hangs out with the main character of the book, of the comic, who's, like, the physical personification of Dream in that comic, every 100 years, and they check back on him, and he's basically, like, this sort of running commentary on different eras of English history and stuff like that. Like, he was a slaver at one point, and he got in, he realized how terrible that was, and he got out of it and did something else. And, like, you know, he was a spice merchant at one point. He was part of the East India Trading Company, or, you know, some of that stuff might be inaccurate, but you get the idea.
Right.
And I don't think they do a ton with that thing, and that was kind of my biggest problem with the episode overall, because, like, a take to leave the monsters, but anything involving Maisie seemed like a, you know, and Ashilda seemed like a more important facet, and... They just didn't give her time to breathe, and, like, that's a problem that I have with Doctor Who, like, in general, a lot of the time these days, is just that they use time travel to be, to tell these big, long stories, but then they don't actually show the big, long stories. They feel the need that every single, like, even as a two-part episode, everything has to be this, like, little self-contained bubble, has a beginning and a middle and end, which... I think it's fine, but I don't necessarily think that you can always have your cake and eat it too with, like, having these century-spanning stories of these characters. I always, like, it goes back to when we see David Tennant running off for 300 years to go, you know, have fun and, you know, party for, you know, and all that stuff. Like, it just seems so weird, like, to have all of that time for this character just, like, wild away off screen and just have it mentioned, you know, going back to the very first season of Doctor Who, of the new series, you had stuff with, like, Billy Piper saying, like, we saw these crystal forests on this moon and stuff like that, and it was crazy, and it was awesome. It's like, well, show us that. Like, you know, like, let us right. have fun with that, stuff like that. That sounds way better than what you're doing right now. And, you know... I mean, but that's just kind of what Doctor Who is, I guess, at this point. Like, it's just, you kind of have to, like, accept that and move on with it. And if you do, like, it's a fine episode. It felt, like I was saying earlier, kind of like an older episode of Doctor Who, just with this, like, very direct character, action stuff with, you know, like, we have the, you know, it's a set piece, you know, set in a very specific time period. We got a couple of, like, you know, set dressing of, like, the of this old English, like, knights and castles and things like that thing going on, And, you know, wrap a little bit of an alien in there, and there you go. You've got yourself an episode of Doctor Who.
you've cracked the formula, Stephen.
Yeah, well, basically, like, that, I've cracked the formula for that very specific kind of episode of Doctor Who. And then at the end, they throw in the, like, more stuff like Am I a Good Man type things. They don't exactly use those direct words, but it's more of, like, Ishilda talking about, like, you know, your actions have consequences and that sort of thing. And, you know, I'm happy about that because it's finally more characters acknowledging that the Doctor is kind of a dick this season. And as long as they can acknowledge that and, like, make it part of the show. And again, I don't even need that to pay off necessarily because not everything has to have some great big payoff. I just need somebody, like, if you're going a direction with that character, you can't just act like everything is business as usual. There has to be some, you know, changes and some consequences to those actions and stuff like that. And they did it well here, I thought, and just overall enjoyed the episode. So there you go. Like, it did nothing about it blew me away, but you know, if anything, this episode, like, very much confirmed my suspicion that they had two sort of B-tier Doctor Who episode plots that they wanted to, like, that they needed to get out the door and wanted to, you know, strap together around this, you know, around a guest star or something like that. Had the, you know, it was just providence that they managed to bring these two together. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It's just, it's a little awkward, using that character in these two completely different ways. And then it ties back into, you know, we see the character, but we don't really see the character. We see what they want us to see of the character, but we don't get to see, you know, what was happening during all that time. Because of the way that they stitched them together that way. I think it would have been better to have that character appearing over time, like Strax and Madame Vastra and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But obviously you can't do that because it's Maisie Williams and she has a fucking, like, career to deal with. You know, she has a multi-million-dollar HBO program to be part of, you know, so, yeah. Those are all of my thoughts. I've never had any more.
So one of the things I noticed right away, and I thought was actually pretty interesting, was the complete lack of Clara in this episode. Like, up until the very end, which was just a setup for bringing back Maisie Williams, anyways. But she was gone from this episode. And it was all about the Doctor, kind of chasing a shielder around and using his sonic sunglasses again. Oh, good lord. But I did like that initial opening scene where he climbs through the wagon there, the carriage. That was kind of interesting.
There's some good humor in this episode. There's some good moments.
Like, and there's fantastic puns. As a fan of puns, there were phenomenal puns by Sam Swift in this episode. Phenomenal puns.
One minor thing I guess that kind of got my goat a little bit, but it's just, again, like, I'll just say it, is that the idea of, like, okay, well, we've got this character who's been around for hundreds of years and we need to show that she, you know, she's felt heartache and she's, you know, had problems or stuff like that. What do we do? It's like, well, we do the thing that literally every media has, like every facet of media has ever done with a character that it wants to humanize, or like a character that, like, oh, well, normally you wouldn't care, but now it's like, well, she had a bunch of babies and the babies died, she had a family and their family died or whatever. And part of it is just because this has been on my mind lately. Like, I was reading, you know, Marvel's relaunching its, its comic initiative and everything like that with all new, all different Marvel and stuff. And Invincible Iron Man 2 just came out last week, and there's a line in it where villain kills these two, you know, bystanders, and Tony Stark says, like, you didn't have to kill them, and the villain says, like, you know, she was an agent of Hydra, and he was a whore, and, referring to these two characters, and then Tony Stark says, like, they also had families, so it's like, well, no, sure, but, like, you don't... It's a bad thing that she killed people anyway. Like, it's a like, I get what you're trying to do, but, like, it's just, to me, the laziest, like, narrative device, especially, you know, regarding, like, you know, you can say whatever you want, you know, about, you know, how it's used elsewhere and stuff like that, but it's, like, it's very commonly used for women characters and stuff, you know, and things like that, and, there's such a thing as just being good for its own sake and stuff like that, and there's such a thing as just, like, yeah, she could have had all these, different people die in all these different ways and stuff like that, but, like, if you want the audience to really care, it's got to be dead babies, or, you know, it's just, like, like there's so many more interesting things and, you know, different things they could have picked on with. So they felt, and which I think maybe propped up why her story felt a little generic, and like in the her past story felt a little generic because it's the same mechanism we've seen a thousand times.
Right. Right. Well, I yeah, I think there were interesting touches. I thought it was good storytelling, and I think it was actually a good take on mortality and what goes along with mortality. So, I'm glad the Doctor Who finally covered mortality, or at least this recent Doctor Who covered mortality and immortality and how that all kind of factors into who the Doctor is and goes forward with that. So, we do have any other thoughts, by the way, gentlemen. Any other thoughts? We have we do have some things from our loyal listeners and readers. So we did good on postmodern dad posted a comment on last week's episode. And by the way, we do read all your comments, and it does help us kind of shape how we go about our conversations. And he wrote for last week's episode about the girl who died. He said, "I mostly agree with Marcus. The episode could have been trimmed down, but certainly not down to 15 minutes. Maybe it should have been cut into a half hour, the next week's episode, which is this one, the second half hour." So that whole idea, again, of could have been a good singular episode. That said, I didn't dislike it nearly as much. Marcus, nothing really stuck out except a couple of moments, but it wasn't nearly as bad as you think. I will, however, support the hell out of that petition to get rid of Moffat. I think all of us might. With regards to my comment regarding the regeneration explanation this episode, I am glad this was put out there and done with, so we don't have it hanging over our heads, looming and waiting to be done. But I agree that it was pointless and should absolutely have been done last season, because now he keeps saying, "I'm the Doctor, I save people," which is fine, but he didn't start out saying that last season. So good comments by Postmodern Dad. And for this week's episode of Doctor Who, Mike Zero, at iMikeZero, says, "The Woman Who Lived would have been a great episode to air after Clara leaves," just removing her bit at the end. And I think that this could have been a good, I think he's right, it could have been a good episode for that. "I think it was a great episode dealing with consequences from the Doctor and how he unintentionally creates allies and enemies." It's a good point. Let's see here. Mark Griffiths, at the RP Genius, writes, "Catching up on Lonely TARDIS, I completely agree with Annoyed Gamer on last week's episode, and I'm happy you guys mentioned Jenny, because what the fuck happened to Jenny? Same goes for Susan. I'd love her to make a comeback at some point." Yes, we're working on it again. Scheduling, it can be a tough thing. It's a crazy time of year. Our good friend Annalie at Sublevel 28 writes, "Great episode. I love the philosophical ones. Jack was mentioned. 4.5 out of 5. Fancy Manatee at MP Dorian writes, "More interesting than last time. Lion was useless." Yes, of course. "Would have been better if it was placed later in the season." And I still agree with that. Now, though, knowing that there is a third part to this story, I think that'll help later on in the season. But I
don't think it's really a third part. I still think it's just going to be thing. Like a tiny scene. Like, I don't think.
Yeah.
They did not have Macy Williams part. Around for that many episodes. Like
I agree with you, though, Stephen. I would have loved to see her adventures, the leper colony, being this great fighter, being a queen. I think those would have actually been pretty interesting stories. And I do think the Doctor must have crossed paths with her at some point during these adventures, because during last week's episode, he kind of gave a double take to her as if he had seen her before. So I do wonder now if during his adventures he has maybe seen her.
Well, he explained that was like reverse deja vu or something like that, right? Yeah. He said it was deja vu, but it was like somebody he hadn't met yet in his time stream. Yeah. So I think that was what he was applying.
Postmodern Dad at PPM Dad writes for this week's episode, says, "Everybody is all happy Captain Jack got mentioned, but it would have made a greater impact if he had a cameo. Much as I said, and others, it would have had a greater impact had the two episodes been much further apart in time." I think we're all kind of agreeing to that now. He heard she's returning in a few episodes. Hope it isn't just wasted, but actually means something. See, Steven, I'm not the only one that thinks it might actually mean something, or at least hopes. And like the previous episode,
everything can always mean something on Doctor Who.
That's correct.
Moffat makes it mean nothing.
Yes, thank you. That's a great point. And the, like the previous episode, it seemed like half an episode drawn out to full length. At least Maisie Williams seemed like a real character this time. I agree. She had a purpose this time. She was fleshed out. These last two episodes made me wish we were back to the old 25-minute format. While I wouldn't say that, I do think this could have been a great feature. It could have been a good feature-length episode, a mid-season finale type of episode. Hour and a half could have been good instead of a these two separate ones. But I do agree. Postmodern Dad. This was a good, more complete story focused on her character, better character development than what she had last week. So most definitely. Any other comments and thoughts, gentlemen? Dear friends?
Nope. I think we're, yeah.
Yeah, we've had a good episode. I think we're right at about that hour mark. Hopefully the Hangout didn't die with YouTube. For some reason, my computer crapped out midway through, but you guys kept going, so that was good. Again, please rate and review us on iTunes. Always helps. Please tweet about us. Let everybody know you listen to The Lonely Tires. We're getting some great tweets. I've read a couple. A lot of folks have been tweeting and retweeting and it's helping our number of listeners is constantly going up every week, and I know we love seeing that. So that's why people like companies like Big Finish are now giving us things to review that we can get out to you guys. So it's getting spreading the word out there, and we're gonna have contests. I swear, now that my office is almost cleaned up, I have my batch of stuff over there. I have some neat little digital things that I'm gonna give away as well. Starting next week, every episode I will be giving away something in the lead into the rest of the season. So six episodes left in the season. Maybe what we could do next week is talk about the first half of the season. We can kind of dive into that with Sean in there. I want to get his thoughts before we get the second half started. So
yeah, give us all an excuse to catch up. And I swear by next week I will have listened to some of the Big Finish stuff.
Not a problem. So again, find us at Lonely TARDIS on Twitter, LonelyTARDIS.com on the internets, and in space and in time, forever and ever. Amen. On iTunes, on Stitcher, on a bunch of other of those types of things. And you can find me at Dolly Domofsky. Steven, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Steven Strom, StevenStrom. You can also read my stuff on Dorkly and Ars Technica, both websites. Dorkly is a pretty good site, by the way, for people who are into stuff like Doctor Who, because it's just an entire site about nerd culture and different things like that. So if you want to check out my work and anybody else's work while you're there, that'd be a good place to do it.
Cool, definitely. And Marcus?
You can find me working at McDonald's.
No.
No, you Marcus, can find me.
Get that bad.
That all-day breakfast, right?
At Annoyed Gamer. And then also check out my other podcast, my new one. No comments allowed on SoundCloud. If you do a search for Marcus Beer, I will pop up. Two episodes in.
I'm going to listen to that still.
Yeah, it's I listen to the first episode, I get the second episode going. So very good stuff. Thank you, everybody. Oh, you can find Sean Norton at Sean Norton, blah, 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 blah. He's not here again, so he doesn't get all the love.
No problems.
We'll see you guys on the next Lonely TARDIS. Bye-bye. We love you.
I still love you, Sean.
Yes, we do.
I'm a lion man from space.
Rawr.